welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm Liz Loza. I'm here with producer Brett and Matt Harmon, the wide receivers maven, the four-eyed maven.
That's a
nice Game of Thrones ref.
I like the four-eyed maven one did make me laugh.
That was horrible.
I mean, it was horrible, but it made me laugh. Like, you know, you can laugh at something and not think it's good content, but like just a little ha-ha.
Well, because it was about you.
No, I mean, I just think it was clever.
And about you, which is primary to your finding something
not necessarily
interesting and adorable,
Liz,
and tickling.
That's not necessarily true. I can find humor in many other situations. Like, I think I found a lot of humor about some of your stories at the NFL PA rookie premiere.
No. We're just jumping right there.
I mean, I think we should get right into it.
So, okay.
The people want... They listen to a podcast like the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast, which, thanks for listening. This means you're not a loser. Or an idiot. And you get it. However, they listen to a podcast like this because they want inside information on players and situations across the NFL. And you have a lot of insight on these players right now. So, because you just met a bunch of these rookies.
Right. So I went to the NFLPA rookie premiere, which is an event held at the Beverly Hilton where they reveal these players' professional jerseys to them for the first time. Lots of characters there. Let's see. Who should we start with? Kyler Murray was there.
I know we should finish with.
He and Hollywood Brown were hanging out, which makes sense. Kyler was very nice. I didn't speak to him much, but he was
not a big pizzazz guy.
No. And P.S. He and Hollywood are like the same height.
Well, so I wanted to ask you about this because this has been, for whatever reason, a very big topic on the Twitter sphere this week because of the picture from the day after, you know, Marquise and...
At the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, and they're standing next to each other, and people have been doggedly deciphering, oh my God, Kyler is shorter than Marquise, who's definitely 5'9", which, by the way, is wild and weird to me that we're still obsessing about this. Like, we literally have an event called the NFL Scouting Combine, where they measure people's height for this instance, and people are still talking about the guy's height.
We also know that, like if you know any of Baby Hawk, Andrew Hawkins' story, you know that there are ways to cheat that system.
The height? I mean, the weight. Yeah, but the height?
He put, like, lifts in his shoes and stuff.
I guess, but I wanted to read
He's not 5'10".
I wanted to read this tweet from my good friend Patrick Claibon at the NFL Network. He said, we got people out here that need assistance to get the big boy cereal talking about Kyler's height, SMH.
What is big boy cereal?
It means it's a short man joke.
Okay. That's weird. Why you got to put cereal into that?
I thought it was clever.
Okay. Sorry, Patrick. I don't know you. Well done.
Well, that one landed not the way I expected it to.
They're the same height. Yeah. Like, they're absolutely the same height. I don't know who's wearing what sort of gym shoes.
Who cares?
But that's the point. Like, who cares? We know he's short.
That's what my point is, why are we still talking about this?
It's something to talk about. And it worked, by the way. Like, you bit hook, line, and sinker.
I guess you're right. Damn.
Who else was there? AJ Brown and DK Metcalf were cool together. I met Deebo Samuel. I talked to him quite a bit.
Let's talk about Deebo because, you know, we know you really like Deebo Samuel as a player. I mean,
I would say that he's maybe not going to splash or make as an immediate impact as maybe I had initially believed.
That's interesting because we will be talking about teaser later in the podcast, some of these San Francisco wide receivers and other mystery wide receiver groups.
Also met David Montgomery.
You had a good experience with David Montgomery.
I did. He was very professional, wants to work very hard, kept telling me over and over again how he's going to make Chicago proud. He was all business, but like also socially acceptable.
You put on your Bears fandom hat for that one.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Work hard
for the town, son, huh?
We talked about Jordan Howard a little bit and how he understands that it's a business and he's excited to work with Coach Nagy. We also who else did I talk to? Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock. And I will say that I am still very sure that Drew Lock should be ranked ahead of Dwayne Haskins.
Dwayne Haskins didn't make a big impression on you?
Nah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Terry McLaurin, though, his wide receiver and former college teammate did.
Like, when you say he didn't make a big impression on you, would you say that it was just he was boring, he was flat, or just...
He believes himself to be the starter already.
I mean, I guess if I was in a battle with Case frickin' Keenum, I would too. And Colt McCoy, who I don't even know.
But they haven't hit the field yet.
I guess. I mean, he's watched video of Case Keenum play football. Listen, I was watching Cortland Sutton the other night and it dawned on me. I'm like, Brett, I'm sorry, you're Broncos. This team actually just like ran out Case Keenum for 16 games.
Oh, I watched it.
Yeah.
I watched all the games.
Like, they just did that. That was their only plan. And like
that wasn't their only plan. That's because Paxton Lynch was too busy like having edibles and like
it was having edibles and Swag Kelly was out there getting arrested. But like
Swag Kelly, by the way, to the Colts.
Yeah. But I mean, it just is like their plan was like Keenum's our guy.
Oh, I watched it all happening in slow motion over the summer last year.
And now we got another team out there like they're really going to start Case Keenum over Dwayne Haskins. I don't think so.
I have a question for Liz as well. Wouldn't you want that out of your quarterback?
I don't want any assumptions coming out of a rookie. I would like a work ethic. And I am not the like, there's no I in team sort of person. I'm quite fond of the Taylor Swift single Me, which references that exact idiom.
You never find another like me.
Yeah, he knows it.
I've listened. I have the lyrics tattooed on my rib cage.
Oh, wow.
I'm kind of like interested in a rib cage tattoo.
Someone was pitching me a neck tattoo today. Nope,
not on you, Harmon.
I mean, honestly, I don't know that anybody's be getting a neck tattoo.
The rib cage tattoo.
Maven. Right on the aorta.
Just a raven with some big glasses. I think that would be nice.
A rib cage tattoo?
Yeah. That could work.
On me?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it.
Think about it. I want to get
a
tattoo.
Very painful, I hear.
I don't know. I think like just like I would like it up the sides. No one can see what I'm doing. Anyway, let's talk about Dwayne Haskins.
Speaking of making assumptions.
Stop it.
I
know what you want to get to, but let me finish Brett's thought.
All right. I forgot Brett. It was so long ago I forgot Brett asked.
I was second billed on this podcast. You said, welcome to the podcast. Producer Brett's here. Second billing.
Yeah, that was on my radar. Don't worry.
Harmon is third.
So I don't want assumptions out of any rookie. I would like to see a little bit of humility, especially when you did get drafted after Daniel Jones and your reaction was all over the internet.
Mm.
There is, to me, a difference between confidence and arrogance. That line is towed perfectly by one Drew Locke.
Yeah, talk about assumptions. I assume you had a lovely evening with Drew Locke because I follow you on Instagram.
As we know.
And I follow you on Instagram. And I, as discussed, I'm a Broncos fan. And a picture from your Instagram made it very prominent on the Broncos subreddit on Friday evening, Saturday morning. Over the weekend, and it's a picture of Liz Loza with Drew Locke.
Yep.
Any other details you want to give about that?
No lies detected.
The top voted comment, just for the listener, Drew Locke in a white Nike hoodie, Liz in a black shirt.
It's a nice shirt,
and he's got his hands around Liz, and the top comment.
He doesn't have his hands around Liz.
He's got his arm around me. Elite QB and elite hand placement. And I agree.
I don't understand why this is such a big deal. I had a very good professional conversation with Drew Locke ahead of taking this picture, who was, by the way, my producer said, let's get a picture. I told Drew how
Alan Springer never misses an opportunity for a picture.
I told Drew how I did have him ranked ahead of Dwayne Haskins, that I was Liz Lowe's of Yahoo Sports. He feigned familiarity. And then I told him that I felt like he got a raw deal and that not enough people understand that he had three different offensive coordinators throughout his college career and that I really appreciated his tape and his sneaky mobility. And he said, I'm planning to work very hard. And I said, I appreciate it. I think you and Noah Fant are going to be a great combination in Denver and Broncos fans should be excited. I'm excited to see you ascend. And then Alan said, let's get a picture. Drew said, fine. He put his arm around my narrow rib cage, and that is where his hand ended up. Can you guys as men explain this to me? Like, I don't understand. I am not Like, is there a technique? Do you calculate a woman's the width of a woman's rib cage before you decide to take a photo with her?
I'll be honest. I don't run through like a pre-motivated situation. Like,
I don't think about it either. I was just excited. I opened up my Reddit app on Saturday morning, and I'm because I subscribed to the Broncos subreddit. I'm like, there's Liz. I know her.
That's pretty funny.
That was the extent of it.
To answer the question, I don't think there's any pre-calculated things. You know, you just do it, and sometimes that can land in the awkward position of the hand, or like the weird hover over a person, and it looks like you're like afraid like to touch them, like they're like radioactive or something. And then people on the internet have fun with it, and here right. We are, which is dumb, but here we are.
We should say, Matt, that this is of particular interest to you because you do have another podcast, on one episode of which Drew Locke will be featured. Do you want to plug that now?
I would love to plug that. I'd love to plug Rookie Orientation, because especially for the Drew Locke episode, I have a series of lovely guests, the loveliest, of course, being Liz Loza. So you're going to get to hear Liz's thoughts beyond this picture on Drew Locke. And
poor Drew, man. I feel bad for him now. He's like being raked over the coals for just taking a nice picture professional.
Honestly, it was only 14 comments. And when Brett sent me the link.
That's what Harmon does. Do you see? Like, that's the like backhanded what? Gaslighting that Harmon does. I'm he's like, oh, my God, that's amazing. It's only 14 comments.
Well, though, I mean, I was just going to say it could have been worse.
Your impressions weren't that great.
It is Reddit. It could have been much worse.
It's like when Brett told me this was on Reddit, I was like, oh my God, we can never tell Liz, because I assumed that it would just be a trash heap because it's Reddit. Sorry, Reddit. But when Brett sent it to me, I was like, oh, okay, only 14 comments. Like, and it was, you know, none of them were brutal. Good stuff.
Before we move on to wide receivers, can you tell the Daniel Jones?
Oh, yeah.
Story.
Daniel Jones, I did not interact with because I didn't care to. Because Daniel Jones was walking around in some NFLPA swag, eating a breadstick, not drinking alone. A leader of men, he does not seem to be.
Isn't dipping their breadsticks in water and chilling.
You're with a
Giants fan, too.
I was with a Giants fan.
Our lead producer for Yahoo Sports, Ryan Dornbush.
Yeah, and I kept trying to get Ryan to take a picture with him, and he wouldn't do it.
He's like, I'm not going over there with breadsticks boy.
And when people are like, oh, you know that picture on Twitter that was out, that it's like, this is a real picture, and it's a picture of Eli and Daniel Jones, like, squinching their faces similarly. Yeah. Man, if you think Eli Manning's kind of wussy... Ooh, he makes Daniel Jones look like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Liz, I'm going to give you – you should have taken a picture of Daniel Jones like off on his own in his NFL.
I don't
want to
do it. It's not professional.
It's not professional, but yeah, that shit definitely would have gone
viral. Walking around by himself, NFLPA polo, eating a breadstick.
I'd almost bet.
I'm never getting invited likes, to this event
100
again.
100 likes on that. In. Yeah, 100 likes on that tweet if you'd sent that picture out.
Here's what I was able, like on a football level, to extrapolate from that. It is very clear to me that David Gettleman does not want personalities in that locker room. If you ship off OBJ and you draft Daniel Jones. And one last thing about Drew Locke, I do want to say, because there were thoughts about, you know, if Dwayne Haskins isn't the guy for you, then what about Locke, who was ranked number three by most analysts ahead of Daniel Jones. And I would say that kid has a surprising amount of swag and confidence, and he is not the Eli Manning on the inside type personality that people are talking about him. So clearly, he's actually quite feisty and has said some pretty funny things in the past. So Daniel Jones, though, paint drying, friends.
Water and breadsticks, baby.
And I don't even think they were like sesame breadsticks. Oh, it was no, just a plain breadstick.
Like, knock off Olive Garden, break them from a frozen tray.
They're a little thicker
tray.
Than that, but yeah. I also stole all the sushi at the end. It was very exciting. Well,
free sushi. What are we doing here? We're not at some event with free food to not take some of it at the end.
Exactly.
Were you and Ryan and Alan like Dwight and Michael at the end of that big office party episode where they're out, you sitting out on Dwight's car, like on the hood of his car, eating sushi?
No, they made fun of me because I was like, guys, they have plates of sushi. They're just giving away. And I came back to the table with two and they were like, what are you doing? I was like, done.
Free sushi,
also,
clowns.
The bar has free Chex Mix. And I love,
Chex Mix.
Any bar that has like one of those, if I see wasabi peas in any sort of like munch mix, that's fancy. I'm all over it. Give me two bowls.
All right.
Anyway, should we talk wide receivers? Speaking of fancy, let's talk about the San Francisco 49ers. I bet they have wasabi peas and glasses of Chardonnay and all the fancy stuff, because that is what Northern California is known for. We have a voicemail from a listener about this team. So, producer Brett, should we play that?
Hi, my name's Lee. My question is, who do you think is going to be more relevant this year in San Francisco, catching passes from Jimmy G? Dante Pettis or Deebo Samuel or Jalen Hurd?
It's a crowded group there in San Francisco. Our guy didn't even mention Marquise Goodwin. Jordan Matthews is like kicking around on the roster. He's not making that team. No, he's not making that team. It's an interesting group, Liz.
I mean, to me, there's a clear winner of these.
Hit me.
Dante Pettis.
Yeah, I think it's Pettis.
Deebo Samuel and Jalen Hurd some overlap in their skill sets. So
when you look at I think there's a non-0% chance that Marquise Goodwin could lead the team in receiving yards, but I said non-0% chance, but I think he outproduces Deebo Samuel this year.
I think that's true. I would take Marquise Goodwin as the number two on this team.
Yeah, but number
Dante
one,
Dante
Pettis
is definitely the number one. I mean, when you look at what he did down the stretch, I think he had three straight games of seven targets with one red zone target apiece from weeks 12 through 14, just before the fantasy playoffs. I know that this is like the time of year that coach speak gets out of control, but huge expectations is the quote from John Lynch. He's adding strength and muscle mass because he was a little dinged. I mean, that's my major concern with Goodwin, too, is his inability to stay healthy. But Goodwin is like 28 plus.
Yeah.
And Pettis is only 23. So give me the upside and the youth and the fresher body.
Pettis is good.
Have you charted him?
Yes. Just last weekend, actually. And, you know, coming into this season, last season, you know, the note on Pettis, and the GM said it as much, was that, you know, we like him because he can play all three positions. Mm-hmm. And that's true. He can play flanker, he can play slot, he can play X, but they use him as an X receiver a lot. Like in the metrics I chart for reception perception, he faced press coverage on 34.9% of his snaps. That's really high. That's up there with like top level X receivers. AJ Green is 38%, Michael Thomas 37%. So he definitely played a lot at X receiver. And early on in the season, like looking at the games where he wasn't playing that much, but still running routes or whatever, wasn't putting up big numbers. I was like, they were the first two games I looked at were really, really bad. And I was like, oh man, this isn't going to be good. But by the end of the year, he had really come on and was separating really well. I mean, with behind the numbers was really good route running, really good separation. So
and that, if I remember correctly and have not rewatched the tape or obviously done any charting, came as Marquise Goodwin was absent from the lineup and therefore he got more reps. So I would assume then if with practice his development as a receiver continued to grow in a full offseason with these expectations, the ceiling is even higher.
Yeah, I think so too. And that ability to, if he does play as that X receiver more often than not, I think that makes him stand out from guys like Deebo Samuel, Jalen Hurd,
sure,
who definitely can't play that position.
Nope. Fire hydrants on the outside.
Well, Jalen Hurd is massive, but is a former running back. But Deebo Samuel is definitely tiny.
Let's talk about more wide receiver groups, because this was kind of thank you to our caller. What was his name?
Pete.
Yeah, didn't quite hear it very well.
All right,
thank you, Pete.
Thank you, because now you've allowed us a whole topic
plethora
to discuss.
Of options.
Plethora, sure. I want to go through a couple of wide receiver groups that have no clear number one or number two option and see who we think could rise to the top.
Let's do it.
Let's start with Baltimore.
Baltimore, right now, they have my boy, Willie Snead. Mm-hmm. They have Hollywood Brown, Miles Boykin. And
lots of boys of yours on this roster.
I think, and last year they had Crabtree, who was one of the like original reception perception finds before he went to Oakland. Like, you know, he had that really bad year with San Francisco, but that was a good find. But then like, he's going to be productive his next home, whatever. And then Willie Snead and John Brown, like, yeah, I think the Ravens need to send me a paycheck. Basically, I mean, I guess it didn't really work out last year, so maybe not.
But really, really pushing that whole like Raven Maven bit right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, we're really leaning into it. Maybe I will have to get that Raven tattooed on me somewhere.
Please don't ever do that. So which of these guys, Seth Roberts also on the squad, which of these four gentlemen are
Seth
you interested
Roberts.
In? Well, Seth
Moore.
Roberts is going to have like one or two games a year where he inexplicably
gets like
30 catches,
red
three
zone
catches,
targets.
Two touchdowns. Like.
Yeah. I think the favorite to lead the team, you know, is probably Hollywood Brown.
Really?
I mean, I think Snead could actually lead the team in targets, mm-hmm. but in terms of like receiving yards, touchdowns, you would think it's going to be Brown. I think this team is going to be a better passing unit than people think. Because I love the way, if you have Boykin as your X receiver, you have Hollywood as your flanker, you know, a guy you can motion around pre-snap, and then you have Snead as your slot receiver, I still think Willie Snead's a really good player, like as a slot guy.
I have Willie Snead ahead of the rest of a lot of these guys.
I can see that.
I do think there's going to be, so we've talked about this, that everyone is saying that Baltimore needs to change their offense to fit Lamar Jackson. This is a run-first offense. But then a point that you made in Nashville, Matt, was that you don't go and get Boykin and Brown and
in the top 100 picks.
And not try to extend your passing game, right?
Yeah.
I loved Miles Boykin as well coming out. I just don't think the maturation is going to be very quick for him. I think he's a raw prospect. We've comped him to Kenny Golladay. It took a while for Kenny Golladay. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if this kid like blows a hamstring and is out for 4 weeks. Like,
I think you're looking at 2020
yes.
as the year for Boykin. I still think he could be the third receiver in terms of snaps played.
I want to see Hollywood Brown's rapport with
Lamar
Jackson as the summer falls into or as the summer turns into the fall. I think Hollywood Brown will have maybe after Halloween or just before Thanksgiving three big games, but I don't expect any sort of consistency out of him. I do think if you're looking for the highest floor player, it's going to be Willie Snead.
I love that. I love that call.
You know, his targets didn't really dip with Jackson under center from weeks 11 on. Even though like Willie Snead was hurt off and on throughout that, his targets didn't really dip. What did improve was his efficiency.
Yeah.
And so that also leads me to believe that there's a switch in usage and rapport. And so I do think, especially in a PPR league, like Willie Snead could be an interesting value play.
And I've continued to say this, and I'll say it once again, Lamar Jackson, it would be disingenuous to say that he does not have a passing problem based on what we saw from his rookie season. However, he was this way in college, and I believe he was this way in the NFL last year. He is a better middle-of-the-field passer, much better than he is outside the numbers. I think he throws a pretty good deep ball, which still gives you hope for Hollywood Brown, especially mm-hmm. on those deep posts over the middle of the field. But he's like, that was what I thought doomed the Ravens in that playoff game against the Chargers. So many of their passes were to the outside the numbers, which just showed a little bit of a problem identifying which your quarterback's more comfortable with. But middle of the field passing, if that's his strength, that jives very well with what Willie Snead does on slants, crossers, etc.
Let's talk about Buffalo, another young quarterback, Josh Allen. They've got John Brown.
GOAT, number one receiver.
Zay Jones.
Who is apparently Cole Beasley also.
Cole Beasley and Robert Foster.
Those two, it's funny because I was reading something yesterday that said that Cole Beasley and Zay Jones are in a legitimate battle for that mm-hmm. slot receiver job, which I took two things away from. You know, if you paid Cole Beasley all that money and you're going to play Zay Jones over him, that's...
Did you look at the Zay Jones' numbers last year?
I mean, he was all right.
No, he wasn't.
He was compared to his rookie season.
When Josh Allen started to come on, he averaged about 7 targets a game and caught 3 goddamn balls a game.
Do you remember?
He sucked.
Do you remember? I'm not a Zay Jones stan.
I was a truther. I said he should buy stock in Michaels because he was crafty.
But again, improvement off of, like, yes. Did he have a 54.9% catch rate last year? Yes. But his rookie year, he had a 36.5% catch rate. So, listen, Liz, that's improvement. That's improvement.
Sure, that is improvement, but...
he caught 7 touchdowns.
You're
that's
making
what I
a
think.
Good point about adding a slot receiver and these two battling it out.
The second point that I took away from that was that I think John Brown and Robert Foster are very clearly established as the outside number one and number two.
Right. I'm going to give it to John Brown. I mean, just to me, makes obvious sense.
Of course.
I also think John Brown is going to be a priority for the offense because we've talked about his ball tracking skills and, you know, we all know he's a deep threat, et cetera. But I think when you have a quarterback with accuracy issues, you get him an ace ball tracker to help improve those. And so that's going to be a priority that the coaching staff makes Allen and Brown connect on now, like immediately.
Yeah, even before before I fell in love with John Brown, I think the first time I really noticed someone I respected like say something about him was back in his rookie year. I think it was Sigmund Bloom said he looks like when you toss a dog a frisbee, like that's, you know, and he just runs under it and grabs it. That's John Brown with the deep ball, and that's going to look pretty cool with Josh Allen slinging him out there.
Opens it up. New England, Julian Edelman obviously re-signed. Philip Dorsett, who, I mean, in best ball, if you're looking for a
I'm not.
Okay.
This group Harry. Is rough after yeah. Edelman and Harry.
Demaryius Thomas. Dontrell Inman.
Do you think Demaryius makes the week one roster? You had a little thing with Inman last year.
Clean it up. He was a sleeper for me in week 11 and it hit.
That's what I meant. I mean, Julian Edelman looks like a really nice value in fantasy right now. You know, paid, obviously just got that contract extension. He should... you know, eat up targets. They have no real interesting tight end on the roster. That middle of the field should be all of his. And, you know, I mean, I think he's an automatic like fourth round pick in PPR drafts and just, you know, take wide receiver two production to the bank.
Well, and people forget that he started the year not just suspended, but I don't think totally healthy.
Yeah.
The ACL
he's coming
tear.
Off the ACL tear. Yeah.
Yeah. So his production last year wasn't, you know, down the stretch, obviously it improved as he became healthier. But if people aren't remembering that piece of the narrative, then they aren't understanding his full stats. N'Keal Harry, I do think is interesting just because of the number of targets that have been vacated with the various absences on the 2019 squad. I will throw out a small fearless forecast since I did one. 58,
not going anywhere.
58 grabs, 751 yards and 6 touchdowns is what I have for N'Keal. So I still think your best bet and the easiest money is Edelman. But if you are going to gamble on a rookie, N'Keal Harry on this squad makes a little bit of sense to me.
For sure.
Jacksonville.
Woof.
What I wrote on my notes, woof. That is exactly what I wrote. Westbrook, Shark, Lee, Conley, Cole equals woof.
I don't think any of these guys are good.
Dude.
I mean, DeeDee Westbrook is like a fine speed slot receiver, but.
Fine.
He's fine.
Fine. But does he match what your quarterback can do? Not great, right? I thought Keelan Cole just because.
Oh, man.
So wait, the only reason I chose Cole
I'm with you on this.
Is because of how hard he owned Eric Rowe in week 2 of last year.
I was just going to bring that up. I mean, we were on the same page 100% on this Jaguars analysis because I was just recently going back and charting DeeDee Westbrook, and the first game I looked at was that game they whacked the Patriots in week 2, and I was like, this feels like it was from another lifetime ago.
Yep.
Keelan Cole's a great example because early in that game, he has this like awesome one-handed contested catch on the sideline, goes for over 100 yards, and then just disappears from the earth. Sorry, Brett. But I really liked Keelan Cole coming in. I liked his rookie season in reception perception. I liked what we saw from him in the preseason. Then, like, I think he got, like, the yips and dropped a bunch of balls. They just demoted him and he went away.
The whole locker room. Like, we know Jared Quay works here. His brother, Calais Campbell, is obviously on the team.
Correct.
I think a lot of that locker room situation got out of control. And now you've got Nick Foles, who is an inspirational leader, who's written a book. And from a playing standpoint, Nick Foles, we all know, needs, like, one of those contested catch receivers who can win 50-50 balls. And I think I'm not saying that Keenan Cole is the first guy I think of when I think of that, but of those guys, that's your best bet.
I know, like, time is just fluttering away from us, but when, like, 2 months ago, I was like, Liz, like, because you kept bringing up Chris Conley during free agency. It was either on the podcast or the live stream. I was like, Liz, I think at some point I'm going to, like back you into the corner of a take of like having Chris Conley is like a top 30 receiver or something. She's like, this fits with Nick Foles, big outside receiver. But I mean, it clearly looks like we're over that already.
Well, thanks for bringing it up, man.
Well, what? I mean, I'm saying, like, you know, it's one of those things. I think every year with these like mysterious wide receiver cores, like it's one thing for us to talk about John Brown, you know, guys like Willie Snead or Hollywood Brown, you know, first round picks, veterans that we've seen produce at the NFL level before. But, you know, these goofballs in Jacksonville, like, we try to like pick something from this group and it's just probably not going to be there. People like Dede Westbrook, though. There are a lot of analysts that really, really like Dede Westbrook.
Yeah, he's not
for
me.
I just don't get it.
Let's talk about your on-again, off-again relationship with the Carolina Panthers. I was watching your Instagram stories this morning. And I don't know when you posted that, but
I forgot that I did. I forgot what you were referencing. I was like, oh, yeah. I did post something about that.
You posted a picture of DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel practicing together.
Yeah. Those guys are like, I kind of think they're like sneaky, really good friends. Because, like, I follow them both on Instagram. I follow the Panthers on Instagram. They post, like, together a lot, like, real smiling and happy. Yeah, I mean, it's cool because, look, here's the thing about the Panthers receiver corps. They have a really – they have really inspiring, like, hopeful, young number one and number two receivers, you know, and more – or Samuel and Moore. And behind them, they actually have some really interesting depth. I mean, Torrey Smith, I think, is done. But Chris Hogan's interesting as a number three receiver. They just signed Aldrick Robinson, who, you know, he makes big plays like wherever he goes. Last year for the Vikings, he was playing over
against
Laquan
the Rams.
Treadwell.
He had a huge game week four, I want to say.
Jarius Wright, like Cam Newton, really started to like him on third downs. They picked up Rashad Ross from the AAF, who like was AAF MVP of everybody's fantasy team outside of Trent Richardson in the AAF. Like, the team has interesting depth at wide receiver, and I don't know how to handle it.
But you like Curtis Samuel ahead of DJ Moore.
I don't know that I'm going to be so bold to say he will outproduce DJ Moore in fantasy because I think the team loves DJ Moore. I think DJ Moore will play inside a lot and get a lot of
those. He has a draft pedigree.
Yeah. I mean, Samuel was a second round pick, but the current.
The second round pick who didn't turn over his first year.
No, he was hurt. I mean, he had that one great game in Miami and then got hurt at the end of it. Then last year, he comes into training camp with like a heart condition and didn't play for a while.
But he outplayed DJ Moore last year.
Yeah. Well, look, Liz, it is impossible to watch the 2018 Carolina Panthers and not come away thinking that Curtis Samuel is by far the better route runner of these two right now. I mean, it's not even
why
close.
Why is that so hard to believe when you know that DJ Moore's knock coming out of the NFL was that he wasn't a great route runner and that he was just this incredible 90-something percentile spark athlete?
I don't think it's incredible at all. But I also think it's a testament to Curtis Samuel, who honestly, like, I think he looks like Stephon Diggs. I will say that. The way he runs routes, his reception perception numbers, spoiler alert, are incredible. Like he looks like early career Stephon Diggs, and we know how good Diggs is. We know everybody knows how much I love Stephon Diggs as a player, and also like, you know, it wasn't like people last year were like, oh, Curtis Samuel, he's like kind of a running back wide receiver hybrid because that's what he was at Ohio State. And yeah. Now this guy's like a damn great route runner. I mean, that is kind of an incredible transformation. So I think people still have that vision of Samuel stuck in their head. But Moore is more of that guy right now than Curtis Samuel is. I mean, I think, and just to bring it back to the Diggs comp, I think DJ Moore is probably already the best after catch receiver in the league. He's good on contested passes. He's not going to separate at all very well against press or man coverage, but can sift through zones in the middle of the field. I think in an ideal situation, we have Curtis Samuel as Carolina's Stephon Diggs, and that leaves DJ Moore to be their Adam Thielen type, a guy that plays off the line of scrimmage and in the slot and can make big plays in a variety of fashions. And if that worked out for the Carolina frickin' Panthers, I don't know how to handle that. I don't know how to handle them having an incredible...
Told you, Matt, you can love two things at one time.
Yes, that is true. The heart wants what it wants. And I want Stephon Diggs Jr. and Adam Thielen Jr. and a cavalcade of interesting, maybe not good, but interesting options at 3 and 4.
Arizona has interesting options, too.
I feel good. I feel good talking
about
that.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Get it out?
I'm excited. I mean, I'm so excited about Curtis Samuel. Like, everybody's talking about Chris Godwin as the obvious breakout receiver of the league this year. And, I mean, that's just, like, write it in pen. It's
going to
happen.
Well, that's what we wrote last year, too.
Well, but this year, this is the year. But, no, but, I mean, like, this is the year the opportunity is all there. Everything lines up. Chris Godwin's breaking out this year. Shut up and deal with it, everybody. But... number two on my list for breakout receivers.
I love that this is
Matt's,
like, who's loudest about it, because this was like everything that was being said last year, and now
number two on the list this year, I think it's
Curtis
Samuel.
Can we talk about Arizona now? Are you still rolling? Do you need a cigarette?
I need a cigarette, yeah. Brett, can I smoke in the podcast studio?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
All right. Arizona has a wide variety of different types of players. Some might say that they're interesting. Some might say that it's a diverse group in terms of skill set. You've got Larry Fitzgerald, who's old AF. You've got Christian Kirk, who is polished AF. You've got
like
this
Christian Kirk.
Andy Isabella. I think that's my bet.
Yeah, me too.
Kevin White, who I just can't quit. I can't quit him.
Why? What? Talk about a, like, look, this is a.
Well, I haven't drafted him for, you know, at least a year.
So what are we, at least a year. I mean, come on. What are we doing with, no, we don't need to talk about Kevin White. I'll take the under on any receptions bet you want to take.
Are you going to chart him?
No. Yeah. Are you kidding? Liz, there's so many receivers in the league. You know,
well, only going to be like four games. You won't have to do the full sample. They don't even exist.
No, I think he actually like played a decent amount of games last year. He just didn't do anything.
Honestly, I put Kevin White on the outline just to mess with both of you. I don't really consider him.
He played nine games last year. He just didn't start in any of them.
So I think when you look at Larry Fitzgerald and Christian Kirk, to me, Kirk is the ascending talent. And it wouldn't surprise me if he outproduces the elder statesman this year.
No, I mean, it's tough with Larry Fitzgerald because he pretty much plays in that same role now every year, the big slot role. And, you know, he does kind of the same thing every year. Which is a credit to him that really for the last 4 years, he's been like the metronome of the wide receivers, you know, same thing every year. You know, whatever, that's great. It's interesting to think how he might fit into this air raid type offense. But Christian Kirk, yeah, I agree. Like, he's a guy I want to place a bet on, you know, after the top 30 receivers are off the board in fantasy, because I think he's a better prospect than certainly Hakeem Butler.
He's so polished. Everyone talks about, I mean, this isn't a fair comp, but I feel like Calvin Ridley, because of the offense that he was on last year, gets all of this hype for being polished. And I know you charted him.
I haven't got to Christian Kirk yet, but he's one.
But
I
feel like Christian Kirk doesn't get the same sort of appreciation or love for his technique because he was, you know, on a shit roster last year.
Well, and Christian Kirk, too, like, you know, I think you talked to him before the draft last year, too. Yeah. So I interviewed him back at the NFL Network and talked about it feels like a different lifetime ago. I remember talking to him because, you know, I did his college reception perception sample and, you know, he played in the slot like 90 something percent of his snaps. And I asked him, I said, hey, man, like, you played in the slot a lot last year. Like, can you play outside? Like, you know, whatever. And he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, yeah, if my NFL team asked me to do it, like, I'm going to do it. Like, I was in the slot with Texas A&M because that's what they needed me to do. And to his credit, he played outside a decent bit last year because Fitz has that role locked down. He will still play inside a decent amount. But, yeah, I think Christian Kirk is going to have a really good year with Kyler Murray.
Curtis Samuel and Christian Kirk, potential breakouts for 2019.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you're writing the article that I'm supposed to write for me. Thank you, friend. Let's talk about Pittsburgh. Juju Smith-Schuster, your favorite. James Washington and another guy that I've had trouble quitting, Dante Moncrief. Ease it up. Ease it up. All right.
At least that's more real than Kevin White.
Well, Dante Moncrief is interesting because if you think about red zone weapons, Vance McDonald, who was used as a slot receiver in college, and, you know, not necessarily a giant red zone presence is the only tight end that they have. They don't have Le'Veon Bell. So, like, one of these guys needs to own the red area of the field. To me, we know what Juju can do, but to me it's between Washington in his second season or Moncrief in his, like, seventh.
James Washington was telling us today that he, not like me or you or Brett, but the world at large through media and Twitter, that he's down from 225, which he played at as a rookie, to 209. So he's lost a little bit of weight. Good for him. Best shape of your life season. Everybody, get in it. And I'm getting a little confident in Washington. Like, because he's so cheap right now in drafts, and I hope he stays that way.
That's not going to stick, though. I feel like that. Depends. Like, he's going to be.
Well, he's a drumbeat player, like we talked about.
Yeah.
If we start to hear more, like, wow, James Washington looking great in mini camps. Wow, he's really looking great in practices, and he takes it to training camp, then he takes it to the preseason. But I still think there's probably a capped ceiling on him because he has no history, no production. You know, he wasn't good as a rookie. But I thought he was a good player coming out of college, and, you know, this is an offense that should be top 15 in pass attempts at least.
I'm also just worried about who's going to score. Like, what I guess not worried about. What I want to know is who's going to score these touchdowns. And people forget that Moncrief did. I mean, that's all he did in Indianapolis when Andrew Luck was healthy. 7 touchdowns in 2016, 6 in 2015. Those aren't awesome numbers, but his primary role was to just post up in the end zone. And people want to look at his 2018 numbers, but I was with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Like, this is a mess. So I think that it is a strategic move on the part of the Pittsburgh Steelers to get a receiver that they can just throw into the red area of the field when they need somebody to do that.
It's good insurance.
For fantasy purposes, like divorcing it from football, I think that James Washington's probably going to be a more valuable IRL piece for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But in terms of fantasy, would a 6-touchdown season out of Dante Moncrief be that surprising?
No, especially if Vance McDonald doesn't work out at tight end, which...
He's not... I just don't think that that's what he's suited to do for... The Steelers.
No, I think it's not. Like, if you're playing best ball drafts, which will be coming to Yahoo in the coming months, he's a guy that I'd throw a dart. Like, Dante Moncrief is a guy I'd throw a dart on late, super late.
Green Bay, Devontae Adams, my boy Equanimeous St. Brown, MSV, and Geronimo
Allison. People
are
liking Geronimo Allison, by the way.
We talked him up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that he's a guy that I was assigned to chart for reception perception. I'm like, guys, there's like 5 games here. You really
got a sneaky feeling his foot's going to bother him again this year. Uh-oh. Like, based on nothing, no history, like no nugs of information, just have a feeling that he's not. It's just a hunch.
Geronimo seems. So here's how we break this down. I think Geronimo seems like the most Rodgers guy. You know, he started out
G-mo.
Getting the most reps early and was producing a decent amount before he got hurt. MVS, I think, had the best season last year. He had a nice stretch.
I said MSV,
there.
MVS.
Yeah, whatever.
Thanks, Brett.
And then Equanimeous St. Brown is the most like talented or whatever.
I loved Equanimeous St. Brown's coming out of
Notre
Dame.
Liked him too. I was 100% with you on that.
But he does not gel with Aaron Rodgers.
Potentially, you know, depending on how much you want to believe out of that story, which, I mean, you know, and he was a guy that was like, I'm not going to stretch coming in the NFL. I'm not going to play special teams. So there was a lot about that's why he fell to the sixth round.
It's funny that you said he's not going to stretch, because like my number one note on him was he needed to do some yoga because his flexibility was not good enough for.
He honestly reminded like me of a poor man's Martavis Bryant coming out, because like he's a vertical threat, could really win on like crossing routes and after the catch and stuff like that. But we'll see.
So
I mean, these guys are all worth monitoring.
Devonta Adams 1, GMO 2, MVS 3, ESB 4.
I think that's the consensus. Yeah.
All right. And let's we'll see. Do a little bit of over-unders. We'll do this quickly because I don't like this segment.
Okay.
AFC North, Baltimore.
Sorry, I pitched it to waste all of our time.
Over 8.5 wins.
Give me over for Baltimore.
You're crazy.
Come on.
You think they're going to win 9 games?
They always win like 9-10 games. False. I like the way the offense is set up. I like the receivers they have now. I like Lamar Jackson. I think they could be.
What about all the defensive pieces that they're missing? And don't just say, but every year they make it work.
That was what I was going to say.
Mm-hmm. They added Shane Ray.
I mean, I guess we'll just have to see when the games start.
I just wonder about those defensive pieces missing, and it's going to take a little bit for everything to work, and it's going to take a little bit for that offense to catch on and turn over. And so it's hard for me to imagine 9 wins as everything is transitioning on both sides of the ball.
I mean, I guess we'll just have to see when the game starts.
I guess we're just going to have to see, which is why this whole segment is.
I'm going to say that for every
Cincinnati, 6 wins. Can we just go under?
Yeah, okay, under. Fine. But I mean, we will have to see what happens when the game starts.
Cleveland, 9.
Well, I mean, we'll have to see what happens when the game starts. But the offense looks awesome right now. I'm taking the over. I think they're, you know, a top 5 team.
Agreed.
In the AFC.
Pittsburgh, 9.
We'll have to see what happens when the game starts.
Stop being
saying that.
Right, Dad's getting mad.
Dad's getting pissy. Under.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think they're an 8-win team. They look like an 8-win team.
I said it as well. I'm surprised that you said that, because you're usually like, you know, the silver linings guy.
Yeah, but I hate the Steelers.
NFC North. The Chicago Bears. Going to Chicago this weekend. I better say over. 9 wins, though. I don't know. I'm going to go.
Push. Go for the push. Just take these.
Yeah.
But we will have to see what happens when the game starts. Whether
Detroit
Mitchell
Lions,
Trubisky
6.5 over under.
Under.
For sure.
I think they stink.
Green Bay, 9.
Oh, man. I want to go.
Think about that division. There's going to be a lot of battles. They'll win.
I want to go over because I think they've made a lot of additions on defense. I like Mike Pettine as defensive coordinator. I like the idea of
that backfield does not seem like a winner to me.
The backfield?
Yeah.
Everybody's favorite boy, Aaron Jones, is there.
Yeah, but again, that's predictability. He can't catch a damn pass.
He's fine. He's not like as good as Jamal Williams. I think he can catch a pass. He just, you know, well, but even, I don't know. I think all that stuff is whatever. But
oh, I know. Running backs don't matter.
No, well, that's not necessarily my belief. But I think the offense as a whole, like, I think the backfield is actually the part you can feel the best about, because that receiver core that we just talked about, even though Devontae Adams is absolutely elite, I think this is the worst receiver core that Rodgers has ever worked with.
But don't you think that Aaron Rodgers can drag them into production? That is what Aaron Rodgers
didn't really happen last year. I mean, dragged him into production.
There's a lot more going on last year.
True. So but I also think you never know what, in terms of gelling personalities, all that stuff. Who knows?
Jimmy Graham's like washed. So there's that.
I mean, he might be washed, but we'll have to see what happens when the game starts.
Over under 9 wins.
Over by 1.
Sure. The one that they lose to the Bears, which is why the Bears are under 9. Minnesota Vikings.
Over.
Yes. Over 9. Yes. Yeah. I totally agree.
Like the Vikings set up on offense this year. Irv adds something to the mix. Mm-hmm. They made some additions on the offensive line. They could still get better, but I mean, it's at least they made some additions, you know? And if Dalvin Cook is healthy for the full 16 games, that would be nice. And they have two difference makers at wide receivers. And I think Kirk has a bounce back-ish year. But we'll have to see what happens when the games start.
Obviously. Matt, before the games start, you are rolling out your pod series. Would you like to give it one more plug?
I would love to. Rookie Orientation, you can subscribe to it wherever you get podcasts. Look, I'm not going to get sappy about it, but it's definitely the thing that since I've started here that I'm most proud of because of how much work has gone into it. And like not on really on my side, but like on the production side of it. So Brett, you and all your cohorts have done a fantastic job, especially Lindsay Fulton, who deserves a big shout out for putting it together. But I promise you, it's different than any other, like how this podcast is different than, you know, two stupid white dudes like, what do you think about football? What do you think about football? Like, we have Liz here being a true elevating difference maker on this podcast, the way that the other podcast.
This is how
is
the gaslighting happens, by the way.
What do you mean?
This is it. This is the, like, really,
I'm like trying to say something nice here. The other podcast, Rookie Orientation, is different than all your other sports podcasts. So check it out.
And episode 1 has already dropped. It was Nick Bosa titled The Prince Who Was Promised.
And I will tell you, we talked a lot about the player that we have on episode 2, who you will actually hear on episode 2 as well, Marquise Brown.
That's right. All right. You can follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at Liz Loza _FF. That's at Matt Harmon _BYB. We are out. Until the games begin. We'll just see how it shakes out.
We'll have to see what happens. Yeah.